Welcome to Conversations with Owens Community College President, Dr. Dion D. Somerville. Welcome to today's episode of the Conversations Podcast. I'm Dr. Dion D. Somerville. Thank you for listening today. Whether this is your first time with us or if you're a longtime follower, we're so happy that you're joining us as we explore the issues and meet the people who are important to Northwest Ohio and to Owens Community College. Please enjoy our previous episodes and subscribe to Conversations to join us for future episodes. We hope you will spend a few minutes to take our four-question listener survey. A link is in our episode notes, and you can access it at surveymonkey.com/r/conversationspod. Hello, we just wanted to provide a quick listener note. As you know, one of the things that Owens prides itself on is being able to pivot and to roll with change. This podcast and the recording of it represents such an opportunity. If you can tell, I'm sick. And so I've been congested and we've been trying to work with ways to make sure I don't sound like I'm speaking through a tin can. And so please bear with us as we get through this episode. Take care. Today, I am so excited to welcome Brian Ashton from Trellis Company. Brian has more than 14 years' experience in higher education. His journey began at The Ohio State University Fisher College of Business, where he pursued a Bachelor of Science degree in Business Administration with an emphasis in accounting. Brian would later get his Master's of Education with a focus in higher education from Harvard's Graduate School of Education. Today, Brian serves as the Chief Strategy and Growth Officer at Trellis Company and the head of Trellis Strategies. Trellis Company is a nonprofit corporation with a mission to develop and advance initiatives that grow individual economic mobility and expand community prosperity. In his role, he is responsible for leading the organization's research, consulting, and talent pathways work for higher education. Brian is also co-founder of the Higher Education Financial Wellness Alliance, is a frequent speaker at national conferences on issues of college access and affordability, and has supported leadership on over 200 campuses during his career. Hi, Brian, and thank you for being our guest today. Brian, I am so thrilled that you are on the Conversations podcast. You know, obviously, we've had this whole engagement with Trellis around the feasibility study, but also the Student Financial Wellness Survey, and we'll get to talk about all of that. But as we get this started, what we always ask each of our podcast guests, when did you find out, when did you realize that you wanted some sort of higher education?
Yeah, so I it's great to be here, and it's been great to engage with Owens on the feasibility study. It's been such a joy to work with you and to work with your team.
Likewise.
You know, for me, education, I remember being in elementary school in early years and really just being curious and, mm-hmm. and realizing that there was an opportunity to continue to be curious and that could carry forward beyond, you know, just the K through 12 experience. But I didn't know what that meant. You know, I didn't know where did I want to go. I didn't know what type of environment I wanted to have. And so it really wasn't until the high school years and being able to drive and sit on a few different campuses and mm-hmm. see what they all brought to bear that I kind of was able to find where I wanted to be. And I think that experiential component of being able to touch and feel higher education was so important to being able to see myself in that setting.
Now, you went to Ohio State University, proud Buckeye. And so you actually were at the Fisher College of Business studying accounting. You're no longer an accountant. But clearly that kind of foundation had meaning in your career. And how does it translate from what you envisioned as an 18-year-old to what it is you're doing now?
I was a very short-lived accountant. you know, I think it's a testament to transferable skills. You know, and we talk a lot about transferable skills from liberal arts and other bases, but even more vocational degrees like accounting have mm-hmm. transferable skills. And so I always tell people, accounting really teaches you two things at its core. It teaches you systems mm-hmm. and it teaches you controls within those systems. And when we think about higher education, where I, you know, spend most of my time now, it's a big system and there's a lot of controls. And those controls, some we've put in place arbitrarily and others have good purpose to be in place. But that level of thinking, I think, was imperative to being able to be successful in higher education, even though, you know, I don't do a lot with the books of colleges and universities, but the framing and the thinking really is transferable to the work that I do today.
That's amazing. So at some point in time, you decided that you wanted to be involved in education. And so after you left Ohio State, you went on to earn your master's from Harvard's Graduate School of Education. So what was that path like?
You know, I don't know too many people that in seventh or eighth grade say, I want to work in higher education, right? And so so for me, the combination of campus employment and campus involvement at Ohio State set all of the foundations for going into higher education later. Mm-hmm. I always thought it would be something where I went, worked public accounting, became a CFO, and then came back and was a CFO at a university or something similar. Mm-hmm. Quickly realized that I was better served, I think, to transition back sooner. The realization was I had a great contextual understanding through my involvement of Ohio State. I knew the issue areas really deeply that the institution was facing, mm-hmm. and could scale those and understood the broader context. But I lacked a lot of the student development and other theoretical foundations that my colleagues had, especially being in and out of student and academic affairs. And so being able to go to Harvard Graduate School of Education allowed me to kind of, you know, take about a decade of experience and say, I'm going to back this into the theoretical frameworks and mm-hmm. everything else. And I think, you know, that experience allowed me to contextualize some of the things that I had done on campus, but then also to challenge some of my thinking about how I approached student problems, really, in particular, but also where the field of higher education is going.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because I did the flip. Mm-hmm. You know, I went straight from my bachelor's program to my master's program, and it's that whole theory to practice. But you had experience that you could then do that immediate application of on a professional level that you probably can't do the same way as a graduate assistant. Mm-hmm. That was the whole, you know, theory to practice framework there, that you were a grad assistant and you could do that application. But you had a bigger depth of that kind of experience so that those theoretical frameworks probably had better application for you.
I think about it, it's always interesting, because in some ways it's better. I think it's able to be, you know, to provide some of the real life examples and everything else. But the other side is you almost come in jaded, you know, and you come in and you have, especially I was in a very blended classroom with people that were straight out of undergrad, and, you know, they come in all idealistic and we're going to do this and this. And I'm like, no, you're not. There's debt covenants, you know, and they're like, what's a debt covenant? You know, and so you maybe aren't able to maximize the experience in the same way mm-hmm. from a theoretical perspective, because you are always running through the checklist of practicality. I don't know. I go back and forth. I think there were a lot of positives, but I wish I could have had the unfiltered view of the things that I was going through.
So you just, you know, every class period would pour rain on new professionals, you know, sunshiny parade.
I had at least two faculty members who actively discouraged my participation in certain conversations, I think. I get it. I think it is for many people, right? I mean, you get into higher education and you're super, super passionate, and you know, this goes back to accounting and systems, right? You assume that everything's set up to serve the student, but mm-hmm. in reality, we have constructed so many barriers that serve other stakeholders in that process for a variety of reasons, that it makes change really, really hard, you know? Right. And so there was a lot of conversation of, oh, if we just did this, it would be better. And it's like, yes, but, you know, this is here for these, we can debate whether they're good or not reasons or not, but they're mm-hmm. there for those reasons. Right. And yeah, so that was a challenge of going back a little bit later.
Well, but kind of based on that, that really has been kind of the underpinnings of your career and what you're doing now. Can you talk a little bit how you've been able to blend the vision, the hope, and promise of education and what it means in terms of transforming people's lives with the financial aspects of it?
I think that is the question that higher education as a whole has to answer, you know, and I think that three things can all be true in some way, shape, or form. The first is that there's no better way to achieve socioeconomic mobility and employment stability than post-secondary education attainment. Mm-hmm. The second is that the system can fail a lot of people who enter into the system. And so we look across the country and we see over 40 million Americans with some college and no credential. And in many ways, those were people who were attracted to the hope of higher education and then didn't make it their way through the process. Mm-hmm. And the third is that even though we as an industry are, you know, kind of a world champion students and talk about student success, we can still put up barriers that we may not even realize are barriers that prohibit people from making their way through. Mm-hmm. You know, in many cases, the average student loan that somebody leaves with is less than the average car loan in the United States. And I would say that that is still a good investment for most mm-hmm. people to take on, and that the transformation of the education is going to be, you know, such that it'll lead to great outcomes. But, you know, we also have to reckon with the fact that we're not getting students through and to completion as an industry in the way that we need to. And so that, I think, is the, if we want to talk about trust and value and all of these things that are kind of a big part of the higher education discussion today, mm-hmm. we have to recognize that all of those things can be true. It can still be a great return on investment. We can still think that students are our primary stakeholder, but we can still not be getting enough of them through to a degree or credential that start with us.
There's like 50 questions that are in that one space, yeah. you know? And so, but when you think about finances, that's mm-hmm. often one of the biggest reported barriers to higher education is how do I pay for it?
Yep.
And there's been all sorts of research about different models, different modalities, I mean, all of that. But that's something that you're incredibly passionate about and quite honestly is part of the underpinnings of who Trellis is as an organization. And so can you talk a little bit about why it's a passion of yours and really why Trellis was kind of like perfect for you yeah. in terms of their mission and how you're kind of moving forward together?
For me, it was twofold. It was that, you know, as we think about finances and education, as you mentioned, it is oftentimes the biggest cited reason why people don't complete a degree or credential that they enter into. And seeing people that I went to school with not be able to complete because of the degree or credential or because of the financial situation. But then also looking at when I came back to work at Ohio State, looking at the data that we collected nationally on that topic, it was very apparent that this was a huge barrier. But the second piece is then making sure that people can, you know, get into a degree program that actually helps to create wealth over time, you know, and that there was a lot of, you're entering into a massive obligation when you choose a post-secondary institution or a degree pathway that isn't just the debt that you take on, it's the opportunity cost, it's mm-hmm. all of those things. And so individuals really, you know, you're making, our team at Trellis before I joined did a lot of work on this where, you know, the tagline was you're making a huge decision at a time of a huge distraction, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that that's really true as people go through the process of selecting. So those were two of the reasons that I was really interested in. With Trellis, I mean, we really view removing the financial barriers as being the key to access to education and mm-hmm. in that we've seen a rise in tuition and we haven't seen the need-based aid increases to keep up with that. So the good of higher education has become a lot more expensive. But that's also true of other goods. It's true of childcare. Any, you know, K-12 education has become more expensive too. But higher ed also has the double challenge of living costs have went up substantially mm-hmm. as well. And so in a community college setting across the country, anywhere from 19 to 22% of your costs is going to be direct. Most of your costs are going to be life, you know? Right. And so when somebody says I worked my way through school, that's not a reality for, you know, anybody today, because you still have to support life as well as your direct costs and mm-hmm. Thinking about how do we close those gaps, but how do we also then help that to inform how we view students? Because it used to be if you were enrolled in a college, your persona was you were a student, you know, mm-hmm. and now that persona might be an employee first, a student second, it might be a caregiver first, mm-hmm. an employee second, and a student third. And that requires institutions to really think differently. And that's been a lot of our focus with Trellis is helping to articulate to campuses, who are the students that you serve, right? Mm-hmm. And how do we give those students a voice, especially around their financial lives, difficulties, and everything else that they may experience?
There's been a lot of attention paid to student financial wellness. Mm-hmm. And as you alluded to, there's multiple ways to look at it because students, one, aren't the same as they were just 5 years ago, much less 10, 15, or 20. And the financial realities that they bring to them varies incredibly. And their the resources, you know, that they have to, you know, marshal to be able to, you know, be a student is different. What kind of advice do you think is important for students? because it's, you know, it's more than just balancing your checkbook anymore. It's, there's a lot that kind of goes into not only how they can afford education, but as you said, how can they afford life and mm-hmm. that kind of balance.
One of the questions that I'm really interested in our team doing more research around is, we know that students, just like many Americans, have basic needs challenges, food, housing, mm-hmm. transportation, you know, these basic needs, securities challenges. And so how do we think about, you know, how do we connect individuals to social services that can help to support them to provide a baseline, mm-hmm. I think is really important. The other thing that we are really interested in is how do we help students to understand the value proposition? And so it's a lot easier to persist through some of these challenges if you know what you're working towards. Mm-hmm. And in higher education, I think we've made it incredibly complex to understand, where are you starting? What do you need to take? And then what's the outcome that's associated with that? Mm-hmm. And when that journey is really complex for somebody and you start to get into a situation where you have an emergency expense, it's easy to say school is the thing that drops because mm-hmm. everything else is a more immediate priority. And so if we can clarify the value proposition, help to connect students to support services that alleviate some of those concerns. And then in the case of students, even small saving activity that can lead to a small emergency fund can go a really long way to providing a cushion so that it doesn't have to be a trade-off of, oh, I had a blown tire, I need to drop out of school as a part of that, but rather we can continue to work through it. And so, you know, I think it kind of starts more philosophical and then works down to the financial behavior of how do we set aside even just a couple dollars every month to try to build up that emergency fund approach.
Oh, back to theory to practice.
Yes,
right?
Absolutely.
One of the things that I've believed for some time is that higher education hasn't really done itself favors over the last several decades of articulating that value proposition. Yet one of the first comments that you made, you know, since sitting down was that we know that it's the single most reliable vehicle to socioeconomic mobility and job security and all of those things. Yet it isn't something that we've done a lot with as an industry overall. Part of some of those issues are sometimes highlighted a little bit in the Trellis Student Financial Wellness Survey. And so can you tell us a little bit more about that and how it's been used over the years?
We have had what I think is, other than a federal national sample that they did, the largest data set on student finances since 2018. And last year alone, we worked with 143 campuses around the country, you know, collected responses from over 63,000 students around their finances. And I think a couple things that are really telling from the data, and I'll speak in kind of generalizations, but the reports give some strong data points around it. The first is that student personas are complex. And so, mm-hmm. You know, over 25% of students are caregivers in some capacity. Mm-hmm. They are balancing work and school. Even if they're an 18-year-old, they're employed oftentimes more than 25 hours a week. Mm-hmm. But they also, you know, those that are enrolled do have confidence in the fact that the education is going to pay off. Their financial circumstances, though, are challenging. And so the vast majority cannot come up with $500 in the case of an emergency in cash or credit. Many students are engaging and utilizing credit cards, but not paying off the balance. And so we spend a lot of time talking about student loan debt, but mm-hmm. we also have a short-term credit issue as well with students where they're using high-interest credit vehicles to finance parts of their basic needs that then carry forward and create persistence challenges. Mm-hmm. One of the bigger things, though, I think, is that we think a lot about the idea of diversification with money as being a good thing, right? If you have your money in multiple investment vehicles, it's good because if one goes down, they don't all necessarily go down. Mm-hmm. Students, as costs of education went up and as the purchasing power of the Pell Grant and other things went down, students are increasingly relying on more funding sources to pay for college. And in kind of our hypothesis and how we talk to institutions around this is diversification when it comes to funding college is bad because if one of those sources drops out, then the student is at high risk for dropping out because they are just really breaking even and they need all of those sources to be able to pay for their education. And so we're really concerned about, you know, some of the decreased purchasing power of need-based aid. We're really concerned about the fact that students are trying to braid funding together every semester to pay for college, and they don't have a clear plan for how they can do that, which leads to some of their retention risks and concerns on the back end as well. Over the last years, 2 years, we've implemented a series of questions related to mental health. And mm-hmm. so the other big challenge with finances that we've seen is obviously a rise of mental health concerns on campuses. And we're really interested in, you know, it's sort of that chicken and egg scenario mm-hmm. of finances and mental health. We think that financial stress and anxiety is a significant contributor to to mental health concerns for students. Mm-hmm. And so we're really interested in diving deeper into that data with campuses as well moving forward.
That will be incredibly interesting. One of the things I'm really glad about is that there's a spotlight on mental health that wasn't there previously. And even though there's a lot of work still to do, I do believe that there is significant interrelatedness between mental health and a lot of the things that our students experience in college, and everyone's students throughout the country. And so is it something that was already in the past survey, or is it going to be moving forward?
2022 was the first year that we had some sample mm-hmm. questions on there. And then last year, 2023, we had a very large data sample with that. And so we're really excited about being able to go deeper into mm-hmm. that. You know, I think to your point, though, like that the connectedness, we talk about a lot of these issues at high levels, you know, the financial mm-hmm. concerns or the mental health concerns. And we don't necessarily talk about the student as a whole person as a part of that. And that, mm-hmm. you know, there's a lot of the crossover. And so I think that's what we hope to be able to highlight, and that the data will lead us towards, is that, you know, the financial stability and mental health are going to be connected pieces. And we're hopeful to be able to prove that here.
Mm-hmm. No, that's going to be very exciting. And so along with the mental health challenges that you're hoping to get more data regarding and some of the financial wellness, what other student success initiatives, student support initiatives is Trellis working on?
We're really working, you know, from enrollment to outcomes. And so mm-hmm. there's three real focus areas that we've been highlighting. The first is, from an enrollment perspective, how do we articulate value to students? And so back to kind of my, you know, thoughts on this idea of we need to have an end goal in sight. As higher ed, we need to really think about how do we articulate the value proposition mm-hmm. to students. And that value proposition looks really different for learners today than it did 10, 20 years ago. And options look really different for those learners. The second thing is the basic needs integration. And so we don't have an expectation that every campus turns into a social service agency. Mm-hmm. But we do have a really strong expectation that the mission of most institutions of higher ed is directly aligned to the mission of most social services agencies. Mm-hmm. And that in particular, for many of our open access institutions across the country, you're serving the same constituent, right? And so being able right. to work together on your missions is incredibly, incredibly impactful, both for short-term stability for individuals, but also for long-term, you know, economic prosperity. And then the third thing is outcomes. And so we've done a few partnerships here over the last few months that have really focused on how do we make sure that there's skill alignment in academic programs? And it isn't to say that all academic programs should be vocational and should be directly skills tied, but mm-hmm. it, you know, many of our higher education programs are built on inputs and evaluated based on inputs. And so it's beginning to inject kind of this idea of a feedback loop for outcomes to be a part of the output evaluation for that program. Because we do see that, you know, as we redefine the value proposition, that industry needs to be at the table. Industry, especially as we're recruiting what are considered to be non-traditional, but are now, you know, kind of the majority of students into higher education, we need to be able to articulate that there's employment opportunities mm-hmm. and that there's a return on the investment for them. And so those have, you know, kind of this idea of how do we articulate value? How do we make sure that the social services are there? And then how do we make sure that we're aligning our program evaluation with outcomes as well as inputs mm-hmm. Have been three of the areas that we've been really focused on.
And that's pretty incredible. Well, and it really speaks to that entire continuum of, you know, students and what they're there for and how is it that they progress and actually get the ROI that they were hoping for by enrolling in the first place.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So along those lines, Trellis recently hosted the Solutions Summit. Can you talk a little bit about what that is?
Every 6 months, we do a series of conversations that are centered around different issue areas in higher education. And so over the last 6 months, we've really been able to dive into the idea of sort of who doesn't complete, you know, who's missing out on higher education. And then we at the end of those 6 months, we do a solution summit where we bring together, a series of panels focused on solutions. And two of those are ones that we had as an idea. And then the third was a recent idea, which was the FAFSA completion, because there's been a delay in processing the FAFSA. And so we wanted to highlight the risk that poses for this year. I mean, it always has been a risk, but in particular this year, both for returning students as well as new students, we're really concerned about what that will do to attainment rates for those continuing, but also to college going rates for individuals. The other two things that we looked at, though, were recognizing learning along the way. And so in higher ed, we talk a lot about pathways, but our pathways and pipelines are pretty leaky. So how do we think about not just can we stack things, but can we recognize learning in a way that gives some gratification back to the learner throughout that period of time? And thinking about micro-credentials, badging, those types of things that can also signal to the field that even if the person doesn't persist all the way to a degree or credential, that they still have some accumulated knowledge as a part of that process. And then the last conversation was controversial. It's treating students as customers, you know, and I think we had two panelists and one of them, I think, it framed it very, very well. She said, you know, they're learners in the classroom, they're customers outside of the classroom. And I appreciate that framing because, you know, we live in a world where you write a Yelp review over a $5 meal, right? And so if you think about your credit hours, you're going to have a different expectation of, in terms of what you pay for the credit hours. And so, but students also have choices, and not just choices of do I go to another institution, but they have choices of what do I do with my time, right? And where do I spend it? And so this idea of even if we are still going to embrace them as learners in the classroom, the remainder of the experience we need to treat as if they have choice and that they are a choosing customer to engage with us, I think it's controversial, but I think it's an important discourse to have in higher education if we want students to feel a sense of belonging. And to go back to theory and practice, a lot of what we've done on sense of belonging was at a residential campus, you know, traditional four-year, come stay in a residence hall, go to class. Sense of belonging looks and feels really different when you don't have those elements of the student experience involved. And so how do we create that sense of belonging? Well, we do a customer experience survey for campuses. Students want their problems to be taken care of. They want to feel as if the institution cares and is invested in their success. And so those are some of the things that we talked about as a part of that summit.
It's interesting because the whole notion of our students' customers, that is a decades long debate. And I really think that in the last few years, it has heightened because, you know, we had talked about how higher ed hasn't always done a really good job of, you know, talking about the value of higher education, talking about that return on investment, and even not only short and intermediate term, but long term and what that means. And so if you don't have a good picture of what your ROI looks like, you know, as a student, and you have a terrible experience. I mean, every institution has some example, even the best institutions have some example of where, you know, a student may not, you know, for whatever reason, had a good experience. And so if they don't necessarily see why you as an institution are a better choice than getting an online credential. I'm not saying online institution, but an online credential or, you know, something that they get through a learning app or whatever the case may be, then you really are, you're kind of, you know, climbing uphill in terms of that perception and that value and what it means to a student, because they only have a vague understanding of why this is important in the first place.
The barrier isn't a real barrier to them to say, I'm just going to walk away, you know, but yeah, I think, you know, you're spot on in terms of the you're also competing with so many other things and options. And the credentialing landscape is only growing more and more complex as industry credentials enter in and other things that badges and other, you know, forms of gamification of learning that occur, you know, that training and educational landscape is really, really complex for people to navigate to. And so, they do have that opportunity to walk.
And there's no standardization of it.
No.
There's some that are industry driven that have some consistency to them. And there's others that are just, you know, you don't, it's not always easy to understand what the value is or isn't from those experiences.
Yeah. And one of the things that we've, you know, tried to talk to students about too, is when you get in, like if you were to go and you were to get a credential that's provided by a company, for example, there is probably some transferability, but it really is centered to the job or to that organization, you know, whereas if you're coming to Owens, you're getting a more comprehensive education that should lead towards more of a career and be more transferable across multiple employers. And, you know, I think that that's part of the risk too, is you're going to be training a lot of people for jobs with companies, which is fine if you hire them, right? You know, that's a part of the process, but it isn't necessarily developing a career or you know, more of this employment stability coming from having a broader set of skills that can be transferable across.
Yeah, absolutely. I know for our work with the feasibility study, some of the data that you've pulled, you talked a little bit about from 2013 or 15 or whatever, and then kind of post-pandemic. What have been some of the biggest changes you've seen in students overall post-pandemic? And, you know, I wonder how many of them were already there that were just accelerated. I really think this, you know, kind of the commodification of education is probably one of the changes that we've seen accelerated. But what have been some of the changes you've seen?
We've done a series of work on, you know, understanding value, right? And I think one of the things that came through, and I think it's true even in the employment landscape that we saw coming out of the pandemic as well, is that learners are really, really in tune with the value of their time. And that this is very much a question of what am I getting? How quickly am I getting it? And then what's that return on investment? And so if you begin to think about the different personas that they have, being an employee, a caregiver, a student, you know, it does make sense that they want to try to recognize a return on investment as soon as possible. But it really is, I think, maybe a little bit more of an impatience, right, towards some of the process, which in higher ed, we haven't been great about recognizing that. You know, we've kind of articulated this is the pathway, this is how long it takes. And where I think it manifests itself for higher ed institutions, though, is really around things like course scheduling and, you know, not being able to take a course in the semester you need it could very well be enough for a student to walk away from that degree program or credential program. The other thing that we've seen is this integration, especially with opportunities for remote work and other things, this hybrid nature of their life, right? And so they've become very comfortable going in and out of an online class into an in-person class. And they've also become very comfortable, you know, kind of moving throughout different modalities, you know, for even within a class. And so it gives a lot of opportunities for us to reimagine how we deliver education, which could hopefully make it a little bit more cost effective moving forward. The other benefit of that is they're looking for more of the work and life integration, you know, and so we always talk about, you know, earn and learn opportunities as apprenticeships and some of those other things. But, you know, students really are expecting to be able to continue to work and to you know, continue to engage with other facets of their life while they're pursuing their education. And so I think that that has been a transition, you know, over the last 10 or so years too, of that becoming the expectation. And, you know, and thinking about how we adjust with course scheduling and other pieces to that, I think is huge for higher ed.
There's a flexibility that's expected that wasn't necessarily expected previously.
Yeah,
that makes perfect sense. Makes perfect sense. And when you think about some of the other aspects that we've talked about post-pandemic, you know, the whole gig economy, which may or may not be enduring or not, but, you know, all of those things, how people, you know, really reckoned with life choices and decided, okay, this is what I want to do with my time. It really is all aligned in what it is you're saying.
Yeah, that flexibility, you know, has become a big, big piece.
It's huge. Huge. So we just had a major feasibility study together. Mm-hmm. We're Trellis partnered with Owens, and we're very much thrilled with the process, with where we're headed, all of that. But for those who aren't part of those briefings, can you talk a little bit about what that feasibility study is and the results, and how would you capsulize it for folks who are not familiar with it?
I think this has been a incredibly interesting project for us, and it's been great to work not only with the Owens team but with the community as a whole, because I think, you know, Northwest Ohio right now is in a really exciting moment of mm-hmm. transformation. I think there's a lot of energy towards growth. I think one of the things that has been realized, and Owens and under your leadership has been at the forefront of this conversation, is that the region's only going to get there with educational attainment. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, where we started the process was really diving into the educational attainment data of the region. And we've seen a drop, right, over the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. And we've also seen a drop post-pandemic, which is aligned with the national drop, but it hurts more when you've already been sliding over the last 10 years. Right. And for us, I mean, there just is such an opportunity to remove some of the barriers, to work together as a region, to be able to increase that educational attainment. Mm-hmm. And based on all of the conversations that we've had, the idea of kind of looking at new physical locations, even if it isn't necessarily the main enrollment driver for the institution, is a huge symbolic commitment towards that as a region. And so mm-hmm. we have kind of spent the last almost year now looking at the data, and the data supports the need for increased physical locations that remove the real and perceived barriers to accessing, back to some of those flexibility points. We've looked at the opportunities from a workforce perspective, and the data speaks to there's going to be a lot of jobs that need post-secondary education mm-hmm. in the region, and there's the need to fill it. But the other thing, a lot of the data that we talked about earlier was related to direct to college. And we know that there's close to 200,000 people in the region that are over the age of 25 that are college ready, but don't have a degree or credential. And so Absolutely. When we think about that number, there's just a huge opportunity to not only work with the K-12 partners as a part of this, or P-12 partners, but to work with employers, to work with, again, social service agencies, everybody, to mm-hmm. try to think about how do we engage other learners in the process. And, you know, all of that energy and momentum right now, it's a really exciting time for Owens. It's a really exciting time for the region, mm-hmm. but it's only really possible. And the last part is kind of where we got with our findings, and it's really only possible through partnership, you know, and if we're going to address an issue of this size in the region, it has to be with a coordinated effort of entities. Owens can be the glue that holds that together, but those other entities need to be attached to that moving forward and equally as committed to Owens at solving that gap and that problem in the region.
It's been an exciting process for us. We have thoroughly enjoyed working with Trellis. One of the great things about it is there was already the sense that there was a need for a physical location in Toledo, but we now have verifiable data that demonstrates it now. Mm-hmm. There's been bits and pieces, but to be able to coordinate it in such a way, because this is aligned with our mission in terms of who we are as a community college. You know, if we're created to provide access to education throughout our service district, there's very clearly a population for whom that is not occurring. And so, you know, this gives us kind of some of those data points, some of those talking points, to be able to move forward to figure out how do we create it so where there aren't those enrollment deserts that we know exist in areas of our service district. So it's been a very worthwhile process for us. Now it's really how do we kind of coalesce the you know, all of the potential partners out there to move forward together with us.
One of the things that was so interesting for us around the data was, you know, there are certainly perceived access barriers to the physical location. But when you put the data together in its totality, it speaks to that need for mm-hmm. a regional approach to this. And so you know, it really I think hopefully can reset some of the conversation points moving forward.
That's what we're looking forward to. Well, and one of the things that's very obvious to many of us is, you know, we're clearly committed to our end of the educational continuum, right? Mm-hmm. We're post-secondary, you know, those first couple of years. But for a lot of folks, there's a lot of research that shows, you know, how pre-K is pivotal. You know, there's a lot of research about, you know, third grade, all of those different points to where it isn't only once you get to high school and this is the next step. And so is there any thoughts about where in the continuum should the focus be, or is it kind of in all parts of the continuum at the same time?
Yeah, that's the hardest question to answer, right? You know, as we talk about it at the state level or even at the federal level, we get that question a lot, right? You know, why mm-hmm. put a dollar into higher ed when you can put it into K through 12? And, you know, the cop-out answer is it's both, right? But the reality is that I think that there are two points in the continuum that make a lot of sense. Pre-K and early childhood development, you know, research shows that has a huge impact on everything after. And also helps us to solve another problem, which is childcare, right? And so you mm-hmm. begin to think about some of the integrations between childcare and early education. But then back to that 200,000 number just in Northwest Ohio, you also have that, you know, the open access component of reskilling, upskilling, educating those that did not go direct into college or who did go direct to college but are looking at a different career trajectory. And as we look at the velocity with which jobs and industry and everything are going to change over the next decade, flexible reskilling and upskilling opportunities are going to be essential for a competitive workforce and competitive economic development bids. And that, you know, really speaks to the value of post-secondary and in particular some of the flexible post-secondary education offerings that can occur through a community college setting or in a setting like Owens. And so I think, you know, every dollar into education is a good one. I think, you know, from our perspective, education funding at this point is, you know, yes, it's a public good. And yes, there's public funding and everything else, but it's also a private good and not in the sense of the private good of the individual. It's a private good that industry benefits from as well. And mm-hmm. that those are required stakeholders in these conversations and that there needs to be a level of investment and engagement, both financial as well as time and focus from industry to make the educational ecosystem vibrant for a region.
And that makes perfect sense to us. I mean, that's been part of a big thrust that we've had for the last few years has been those partnerships, not only with our, you know, elected officials and the folks who represent us at the state capitol, but also with business and industry, because those are the future employers. And, you know, one of the things that's really wonderful about Northwest Ohio is the level of civic responsibility that a lot of our companies have. And they take that incredibly seriously. And so, you know, that's something that I think has benefited the region as a whole. It definitely has benefited Owens. And we're hoping that we can continue to lean into that and grow it into the future. So, community colleges, we're biased. We feel very much that we are essential to workforce development for the state, for the region on multiple levels, right? You know, there's been conversation about advanced manufacturing, about healthcare, about education, about more white collar jobs, tech sector jobs, all of that. And one of the things I think is so wonderful about being in a community college is that we literally touch every aspect of that pipeline, whether, you know, you're here for something short term or if you're looking to transfer to get a bachelor's or an advanced degree. That's our belief. What does the actual data show mm-hmm. about that? And what kind of research is out there to assumably confirm our opinion, but to confirm or refute where we believe we are?
When you think about community colleges, right, it's in the name, you know, the community part of the name is to serve the community and to serve the region. And community colleges, by and large, do it incredibly well, you know, and they're very flexible and are able to create programs that are responsive to local needs and industry needs. And you are also serving some of the most impoverished students, you know, that are entering into American higher education today. And so you have the added challenge of making sure that you provide the necessary supports to get those students through mm-hmm. to graduation. I think, you know, the data is really strong in terms of the ability to provide a wide array of opportunities. It's really strong in terms of the ability to be responsive to industry needs and industry engagement. There's always mm-hmm. more that can be done to, you know, make it easier for industry to engage with the institution. Mm-hmm. The industry and higher ed move at different speeds, and we need to work to close that gap a little bit. And I think there's really, for many, many degree programs, there's really strong outcomes from degree granting activity, you mm-hmm. know, at the institution. I think the one area where community colleges as a whole have an opportunity, and this is not just on community colleges, it's also the four-year sector as well, is on transfer outcomes. And so mm-hmm. how do we help students to see the opportunity to transfer, to live and fulfill that, and then to make sure that as they go through that process, they're not what we call taxed, you know, with the transfer tax of lost credit hours, time to degree, and all of those pieces. And so that's a larger higher ed ecosystem where we just don't have credit portability in the way that we need to across different sectors. And even with the best intentions, we still see a lot of leaks there. But it also speaks to this whole idea you know, being able to maintain intention over that time for students and being mm-hmm. able to continuously see that it's possible requires a lot of effort from institutions to put it in front of them. So I think that's the one area where there's some room for improvement nationally. But, you know, I think, you know, and even just in conversations that we've had in Northwest Ohio, the operating as a partner, being responsive to needs, all of those things are what people list as the strengths. And those, I think, are essential strengths for post-secondary or higher education as we move forward into this new kind of landscape that we're all faced with. We have the opportunity. Trellis has worked with over 220 partners over the last year across the country. And we do a lot of calls. Like, we talk mm-hmm. to a lot of stakeholders. We talk to a lot of people. And the passion here was incredible. You know, you would get, you get on a lot of calls and people are, mm-hmm. you know, it's kind of, there's some rough calls, right? Trying to get information out of people. And whether it was the Owens team that was always super passionate about the mission and how is this serving mm-hmm. students and really going to the student portion of it, or whether it was the community that has a lot of pride and deep-rooted experience in the region. And then to your point about community engagement from the corporate sector, I mean, there was just a lot of excitement and passion about making the student experience better and getting more students through. And I think that was incredibly exciting. And then when you combine that with some of the plans for the region, it really is an exciting time, and it's been really fun to watch Owen sit at the forefront of those conversations, and I'm excited to see where it goes from here and see the trajectory of you all and the students that you serve. So
we thank you for your partnership. I think that as we have evolved throughout this journey of you know, defining study and understanding what we need and how we could work together to bring it to reality, Trellis and your flexibility and your understanding not only of a student perspective but a macro level of what's happening nationally really helped us to frame that, and we're very grateful for that. And I really believe that we have an incredible institution. We have an incredible institution with people who truly love being here, and they're here for the right reasons, because they believe in the mission, they believe in our students, and we have a community that is ready to partner. When you talk to people about, you know, hey, what's going on at Owens, they see the hope, they see the possibility, and they understand what education means to people who, you know, may not be in a position where they, you know, have been able to access higher education in the past. And so, like you, I'm excited for where this can go. I think that it has a lot of opportunity, not without challenges, but there are few things that are worthwhile that are without challenge. And so we're up for it, and we're looking forward to where we go next. Thank you so much for being on the podcast with us, and thank you so much for your support of Owens Community College and everything that you and Trellis are doing to ensure the success of our students. So thank you so much. It was a pleasure having you today.
Thank you so much for having me, Dr. Somerville, and thank you for the continued partnership between Owens and Trellis.
Thank you.
Brian, thank you so much for being with us. I so admire your commitment to higher education and to our students, and I appreciate everything that you do. Thank you for your time today. And thank you to all of our listeners. Please remember to take our quick 4-question listener survey. That link is also in our program notes. And please remember to subscribe to join us for future conversations. Until next time, take care.